this is Dr. Dave, and you're listening to a Knowledge Share Conversation. This is episode number 3. Today, we deep dive into agile chartering with Ainsley Neese. Ainsley's the co-author of the book, Liftoff, Launching Agile Projects and Teams with Diana Larson. Ainsley and I are sitting in the balcony of the Clark Kerr Conference Center at the Agile Open California 2015 Open Space event. We are soaking up another Agile Open Space experience on the University of California, Berkeley, aka Cal, the home of the Golden Bears campus. Ainsley is also one of the co-founders of the Agile Open California Open Space event. So we want to talk about chartering today.
Okay.
So why don't you say hello to our audience, warm them up a little bit, tell them about yourself, and then let's jump in and let's start talking about chartering.
Okay. Well, I've been involved in the Agile community since the early 2000s when I started learning about and introducing Agile at Hewlett-Packard and developed the Agile Special Interest Group there. And then when I left, continued really being involved in Agile as a consultant. So that's kind of my Agile background. I got into chartering because I had done chartering inside HP, as I did a lot of project management there. It was more traditional project management, but I introduced retrospectives at HP and was in charge of training people in HP for retrospectives. And really, it was so clear to me that so many of the issues that we saw at the beginning of projects were ones that actually had come up in retrospectives. And nobody was carrying this information forward. If people would start right, or certainly better than they were doing, it would have made a big difference and you wouldn't have heard what we were hearing in the retrospectives. And I happened to, through another path that actually included open space events, I met Diana Larson, who was also, as we were talking about retrospectives, she had the same experience with seeing if people had started projects right, what she had been hearing in all of the retrospectives she'd been doing, they wouldn't have had those issues. So when we were discussing this, we thought, well, why isn't anybody addressing the front end instead of waiting to find out in the back end? So that's how she and I started pairing together about discussing chartering and then deciding to write about it.
That's most excellent. But also, you're very well known for Agile Open Northern California.
Yes.
Let's talk about it. Let's share exactly what was your role in that.
Oh, well, I experienced my first open space at Agile Open Northwest. And again, Diana Larson happened to be facilitating that one. But at the closing, I had been thinking for a while about something I heard in a session that I had while I was there, where somebody mentioned, just in passing, the phrase, collaboration is a force multiplier. And that just really was like a kaboom in my head, you know, and I'd been thinking about it. And during the closing, when we, in open space, we think about what have we learned and how can we go forward with this to continue, I kind of announced, at first I didn't want to, but then I did, announced that I wanted to have an open space in California. And Diana had her back to me walking around with the microphone. And I thought, when I stood up to announce it, I sat down thinking I couldn't possibly do this. And she somehow magically knew that I had stood up, and she came over and handed me the mic. So I made that announcement. We found people who were there from California and in the area that were willing, said, yes, we want to do this with you. And we came back and formed a group, and 9 months later had the first Agile Open California.
That's fabulous. Yeah. So you have become a multiplier.
Yeah. Well, actually, as it happens now, since I am director of a program for Agile Alliance that helps fund traditional open space events for Agile. So I am continuing on that path to enabling this to happen.
But that's fabulous, because also you probably have enabled the Agile Open SoCal, Southern California,
yes,
to have come about. Why don't you share a little bit about that experience?
Well, that was the vision for Agile Open California. Initially was the state, California. However, California is a big state, and Northern and Southern California are different cultures and different communities. And Agile Opens are a lot about bringing the community together and supporting the Agile community in the area. So if to kind of expand or fulfill the vision for the state meant that we could enable something in another part of the state, but it really wasn't the right role to do it or put it on or make it happen. It was to enable, because it's not the community that where we were from up north. So knowing people there and got in touch with them and helped get things off the ground, lift off, so to speak, and get started and get it underway. And they've just run with it. There was a great group of energetic people with a passion who took it and just ran. And we still, David Chilcott, and I still support through Dayspring and helping them with the work, but it's all background work.
Yeah, well, I want to thank you, because I am part of that community now, and it has made a tremendous difference in my life and other people that I've connected with.
Oh, great.
You know, through that community. But let's just pivot a little and talk more about chartering. If someone wanted to learn more about chartering, mm-hmm. Where would they go and find that information?
Well, there was a lead-in for a pitch. So we have a book called Liftoff, launching Agile Teams and Projects. And that's been out since 2012, really the end of 2011, where we talk about Agile chartering and getting teams started right. This is a kind of an echo of this idea that if you start right, you certainly can not probably eliminate every problem that might ever happen, but you're better positioned to deal with them or avoid them altogether if you start things off right. You know, when we got things underway with writing the book, which is what when Diana and I started to do this, we of course said, well, we can't. Kind of book writing is some work we're doing as a team, and if we're writing about chartering, we better charter this book as a work effort, right?
Yeah.
So the first thing we did was charter ourselves as a team for writing a book. And so it helped us. We had concepts that we had discussed before we started writing, how we wanted to do it, but chartering ourselves was kind of the first iteration of going through our ideas. And so it helped us, doing it for ourselves, really understand and amplify and tune the concepts that we had.
So this was actually a lived experience.
Yes, yeah. It was a liftoff experience. And in the book, we included pictures of all the work that we did. So it's an example. There are several examples in there of the parts of chartering, but we included all our book chartering in the back of the book, so you can see all of what we went through to do it.
How wonderful. But if someone had to compare and contrast traditional project chartering with Agile chartering, how are they different? Or even similar as well?
Right. Well, there are similarities, because in both cases, it at the very, very beginning is pretty much the same. On the business side of a company or enterprise of some kind, there's someone with an idea of some work that they want to have done. And then there's somebody that's willing to pay for it. So unless you have an idea and some funding nothing's going to happen. So those two things have to happen with some agreement about, yes, I'll pay for your idea. So definitely both start that way. And there it goes differently. So that idea is the start of both. And you talked about chartering traditionally and chartering in Agile and the difference. And I think one of the biggest differences is we actually do chartering in Agile. And in a traditional effort, I think a charter is created, but I don't think anybody does chartering.
You know, that is a very interesting distinction because you've made it a verb now.
Yes.
And so what are the activities of chartering versus writing a project charter?
Right.
Which are two different things.
Right. Often in most traditional ways of creating a charter, it's done at a fairly high level in an organization starts with a fairly clear definition of what needs to be done. It's done sometimes, if there's a project manager, sometimes the project manager is included in that, but not always. Sometimes it's more of a contract.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a terse, fairly legal, very clear restrictions and descriptions of things. And then it's handed off to a bunch of people who had no input in the content, and they're expected to then act on it. In Agile chartering, we start with, after there's this agreement between somebody who's willing to pay for an idea, the product manager, or if you're dealing with someone who has a product owner role, they may be the same person, they might be different people, but they would get together with stakeholders or other very high-level decision makers who were involved in this. Somebody that doing the funding would need to be involved. And they would come up with the initial ideas about what they want, their views. Now, in chartering, that what Diana and I have come up with, we talk about the first concept we deal with is what's purpose.
Okay.
And that has a couple of different elements. One is the product vision, the team mission, and mission tests. So at the beginning, the product owner and other business folks would get together and come up with a draft of these three things about how they see it, what their view is. And it would be a little more than a rough draft, but a draft still. And we would then come to the chartering meeting, which includes those same folks and maybe some additional strategic decision makers. The core team, if the product owner wasn't involved and there is one, they would come along with the product manager. If there are project managers involved or agile managers or whoever else is felt to be a key player in actually making things happen. They would be involved as a group. And there may be, if you have a broader community of people involved, there may be some very special people picked from that group as well who had major, would have a major impact on what gets decided, what gets done, or the project would have a major impact on their lives. So really have people who are involved in a bigger way in the project than just the, say, some management people.
Okay.
And this group then takes a look at the initial draft of purpose that came up and has a discussion. And it's that discussion is the beginning of the chartering.
Ah.
Because now we're talking about getting everybody's input. Because although the business side and the product owner and so forth might have these great ideas and here's what we're willing to pay for, the core team, the team that are actually going to do the work and build this, may have knowledge about this that has an impact on the thinking.
Yeah, and I would think especially if you were dealing with a brownfield type environment,
right,
where you have something that already exists. People have existing knowledge, or even if, mm-hmm, if you're trying to do something new.
Right, yeah, right. So once that's done, that first piece is done, and they've settled on, this is a good draft, this is what we're going to go with for now. And the reason we say that is that an agile charter needs to speak to its name.
Mm-hmm.
And as other agile documents are, it's a living document. Because a lot can go on, as we know, over the course of getting product work done, so that we may need to come back and re-look at maybe not the vision, that tends not to change too much, but the mission might change, which is more specific. The mission is really that very specific, unique path that the team will take to help make that vision become real.
Ah, that's, okay? That's so excellent.
And then mission tests are what you might expect.
Right.
Those are ways that the team and maybe the product owner can understand how the team is making progress, again, toward the end that we understand is to come.
So they become, the mission tests are more validators against what you perhaps had an initial idea about. How do I really validate that we're really moving along?
That we're moving along, right.
Yeah.
So these are also things that that helps the team learn, mm-hmm, how they're doing. You know, did we meet what we thought, you know, this test that we thought we were going to get to? Because it would be something meaningful, of course. It wouldn't be one of those simple kind of things you throw out, check this off the list.
Certainly.
Right?
But would it be something where it would cause you to do a pivot, perhaps? Because you may have thought about, well, we're going to walk down the street and make a right turn. But when you get there, oh, wow, the street is blocked. So we have to pivot and make another decision. You know, are some of those a part of the mission test?
They might be, yeah. But that's why they're done together, because you need the view of the bigger stakeholder community,
okay,
as well as the team. Now, the team really owns the tests, but having a discussion about it is with everyone involved makes sense.
Now, how would you apply chartering to, let's say, art? I wanted to bring that up. I know we're doing, yeah, a little big twist here.
That's okay.
But because I thought it's one of your passion.
Right.
I
it so. Is. Well, let me do two more things.
Okay.
There are two more parts of chartering. The second one is about alignment, and that's about the team.
Okay.
And how the team can create an alliance, not just among themselves, but to a degree with the larger community they're working with. That has to do with, that's where you talk about values and principles and how the team is going to, you know, how can the team work best together to reach the vision or the mission.
Okay.
And then the next part is called context, and that has a lot to do with seeing the system that this work is going to take place in. And so there are some things that we do in context as well. That help us describe who are all the players in this system that we're working with and what are the boundaries and the interactions that are going to go on. And this is the kind of thing that if you do that before you start the project, you're set up for much better success.
I would tend to agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's something else called perspective analysis, which is our view on taking a look at what might happen in the short term, maybe the next couple of months, because, you know, it doesn't make any sense to plan out for a year.
Yeah.
Right? So it's just quick, and as opposed to traditional charting, which might do a very big deal risk analysis effort, this looks at not just what risks might be, but what are the opportunities that might come up in this project? What positive things are out there that could happen in the next couple months because we're doing this work? And that's a kind of a impact and possibility chart. Now, the reason I wanted to talk about those two before talking about art is both the boundary diagram or context diagram and the perspective analysis are big visible charts.
Ah.
Because in chartering, of course, we're a big proponent of big visible charts. If you can get your vision and mission and mission tests up on the wall while you're working, because purpose is all about inspiration,
yes.
Right? It's there. You see it. It helps remind you. And if you do it in a nice, you know, colorful way and get that posted, and then you get your big boundary diagram up, which also is usually pretty dynamic looking because there are all kinds of things. And you can do that just with a regular drawing, standard drawing. You can make it with Post-its. You can, you know, it's very creative how this works. And the same with the perspective analysis. So these are all kind of art pieces in their own way. And if you do them with color, like we like to do,
yeah.
Right, in Agile, we like these big markers and Post-its and everything. And if you fill your workspace with this kind of stuff, right, not only does it remind you and help inspire, but it helps keep the environment alive, right?
Yeah.
It provides stimulation, as art does, in many ways. Right.
Well, that was a great pivot, isn't it? I didn't expect to see. I didn't expect that.
You didn't see that coming.
I didn't see that coming at all. That was fabulous.
Yeah.
I was thinking that you would talk about an art gallery or perhaps some other things, but wow. That's,
well, you see, you said it.
Yeah.
It is. It can be an art gallery of chartering work. But again, retrospectives can also include this kind of artwork, depending on what you do. Often retrospectives become kind of, or they can be,
yeah.
Because if you're doing like iteration retrospectives, they can become really repetitive.
Certainly.
If you don't mix it up.
Mm-hmm.
But there are ways to make them more interesting, and there are certainly many options out there for doing that. But some of these can be bright and colorful and keep people engaged, especially if you can share it in the workspace.
Certainly. So your walls become a canvas.
Yes.
For your experiences.
That's right.
And your ideas and your vision and your mission.
Right.
And how you validate.
Right. Well, there are, I'm going to space out on the name of this. Anyway, there are five rules kind of for accelerated learning that Diana and her son have created. I don't know if you've heard of this.
I've heard of it. I read the book. I can't remember all the
fabulous.
Yeah.
And Keep It Alive is one of these. Because it's creating, as you know, we know, Agile is all about continuous learning. And so if you can keep your work environment alive, you're enabling this. Because that's the first rule.
Yeah.
But there are all kinds of other things about chartering where we work to keep the environment alive, keep the work alive.
So let's talk about Elizabeth.
Well, Elizabeth McClellan is the artist that's here at the conference today.
Okay.
And Elizabeth was someone that I invited to the very first conference that we had, to
wow.
our first open space. She was just starting to do this kind of big work. And I invited her to come do this. And she agreed to come and was a big hit. People hadn't seen anybody doing that kind of work at an Agile conference before. And it was fabulous. And we've invited her back every year. She has since developed a following. And has been asked to come up to Agile Open Northwest and to Agile Roots and a number of other Agile conferences to do this kind of both the larger work, like, you know, the kind of murals at the beginning.
Yeah.
And in the session work where she sits in session and does a smaller kind of more of a session recording, session notes. I think she calls it visual note taking.
Interesting.
So, which is just wonderful. And she's also did some artwork for the executive forum at the Agile conference, I think. The big one?
The Agile 2015?
She was at like 2013 for the executive forum. And then this year, she and Diana and I did a session together. And she did much bigger mural work in, wow, in that session. So she's really taken off as kind of an agile artist, and she's learned a lot about agile.
Yeah,
while she's been here.
I would love to see if she has a Kanban board somewhere.
I don't know. Anyway, so you were asking about art, and yeah, this is one of the ways that we could, you know, that I was interested in enhancing the conference is with art, because it adds, again, it adds to the learning.
Yeah.
And I think that's so important. So many folks, especially in the Agile community, are very creative and like to think kind of outside the box in different ways. And so having a visual representation of what's going on aids in that and helps people do that that may not ordinarily do it, when they see, you know, metaphors,
yeah,
and things like that. So I think, again, it's all part of a learning process. Art is a huge accelerator for learning.
Yeah, because some people are just visual learners.
Right.
And it makes a difference. I know when I walk in and I see the beautiful art on the wall, mm-hmm, it really changes how I feel.
That's
about
right,
the day.
Right, right. And it changes the tone, and it, yeah, helps people understand the theme better. You know, what we're trying to do, along with what the open space facilitator says.
Yeah.
You know, it helps you carry, if you can carry the image and not just the words.
Yeah. So Elizabeth is here today, I take
it. She is. She's in a session right now, I'm sure, because if we can't see her, she's in a session. Yeah.
So I'll make sure that I spend some time with her, just, yeah, digging in and learning more about, you know, what she does and how she does it. And
I'm sure what she usually posts after the session, the little, okay, session drawing will show up on a wall somewhere.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't see it now, but I'm sure it will be up.
Well, Ainsley, thank you so much for taking time and sharing with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Anything finally that you'd like to just leave our audience with? Or, it's not your audience.
No.
With.
No, I like that first way for accelerator learning, which is keep it alive.
Yeah.
Yeah. I that's just so important. That's the one I love the most, because it includes not just the energy, mm-hmm, about what you want to do, but to bring in all parts of the world to keep yourself going. Don't,
yeah,
leave anything out.
Yeah, keep it going. Keep,
yeah,
it alive.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again, Ainsley.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So if people wanted to learn more about you, or even to reach out to you, where would they? How would they get in touch with you?
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, LinkedIn is an obvious,
okay,
space. I'm on Twitter.
What's your Twitter handle?
At Ainszo, AINSZO. It's short. That's what,
yeah,
I like about that. So, I mean, those are the two best ways.
I learned so much from this conversation with Ainsley about agile chartering. I hope you were inspired by the depth of Ainsley's knowledge and experience. I would recommend that you visit Amazon and update your Kindle library with a copy of Liftoff, Launching Agile Projects and Teams by Ainsley Neese and Diana Larson. Thank you for listening today. Look for the KnowledgeShare podcast on iTunes. KnowledgeShare spelled KNOLSHARE. The KnowledgeShare podcast is hosted on grokshare.com. To connect with our guests, reach out to Ainsley on Twitter at Ainszo, that's AINSZO. You have a question or comment, reach out to Dr. Dave on Twitter at Dr. Dave Info. You grok share, I grok it, and I'll share. Every day, every day. Until next time, pursue goodness, share, and learn.